Welcome to Everybody A, Everybody Gay,
a queer exploration of Pretty Little Liars.
With your hosts, Speak Pirate, aka Joanna. I'm here, I'm queer, and I have a cat named Spencer.
And your other host, LCO123, aka Vina, a proud member of the Church of Vander Jesus.
Well, here we are. We've all got baggage, aka we've all got contracts. So apparently we have to make this episode. Oh, the plot lines are now so scattered that we have almost a full minute of previouslys. This episode is a real dud. We are in the Valley of the Duds now, the doldrums, the dead zone. We've devolved from phone call acting to voicemail pantomiming. And this week it's Emily who's drawn the acting with props instead of castmates straw. After Tanner appeared last week and lightly menaced Emily, the police don't exist at all in this particular episode. What actually happens here, we get a flashback of Hannah and Melissa in London. Emily plays peekaboo with a monster truck. No one is respecting Aria's very reasonable boundaries about not wanting to join poorly matched couples in holy matrimony. Also, Caleb magically knows about baseball, and Damien is back for absolutely no reason.
I've got to believe that at the end of shooting this half season, Lucy Hale must have had severe back problems for carrying this entire show on her wee little back, because she is doing the most in the best way. Like, she is, like, I don't know why I didn't, you know, I always think of, like, Tryon as the actress of the show, and Tryon is great, but, like, Lucy is getting to do a lot more at this point in the show. And my God, she is like the one bright ray of light in this very, very dark cave we have found ourselves in.
That is really true. And I think that I think that it becomes more noticeable because with Spencer's arc, this is like the beginning of like this is like Spencer as like King Lear. It's going to be a straight shot downward for Spencer.
Yeah.
Like from pretty much this episode onward. So Spencer, you think you're miserable now? Every episode, you're going to get more miserable from now until the series is over.
Yep.
So Tryon is a really great actress, but everything that happens to Spencer is a real drag. Whereas Aria still has a lot of like comedic stuff. She has a lot of hat party energy that she can always be bringing to things. So Aria just like Lucy has a lot more scenes where she's just fun to watch.
This is a weird reference, but I totally agree. I remember reading a thing that was talking about, I believe it was the Beatles recording of the song Back in the USSR. And this was recorded at a time when like the Beatles were having some strife. And I think Ringo Starr had like walked off in a huff and he's not on that song. And I remember them talking about how this writing was talking about how like all of the other bandmates are like cranked up to like 110 on that song to make up for the loss of Ringo. And I sort of feel like that's what's happening with like Ashley Benson. Like Ashley Benson is like really checked out. She's like kind of the Ringo Starr at this point. And so everybody, namely, I would say Lucy and Tryon, even Shay in as much as she can, but really Lucy are just like, they are putting in so much effort. They are like Tracy flicking it here. And I appreciate that. I appreciate the 110% effort that they are throwing in to this really just like mixed up, you know, gumbo pot of an episode.
Yes. Strong agree. It is definitely not, it is definitely not Shay's fault. Shay is like barely like, Emily is barely a character as we move through the time jump. So it's really like Lucy has at least stuff to do where she's doing the most. Whereas Emily, it's just getting thinner and thinner every week.
It's a lot of reaction shots. I'm noticing in this episode, it's like a lot of like Emily's eyes.
Oh, man. So, all right. Emily, Hannah, and Allison arrive at Sarah Harvey's room for some recon. Sarah has checked out, and oh no, her room is a mess. Food everywhere, bed unmade, mess. Hannah makes a weird remark about making Sarah lick the carpet.
Yeah.
That was like, I was like, what are they going for there? Like, are they trying to be like phobic? I don't know what they were up to there, but
it was a weird line.
it was a weird beat. The liars head to the closet to get down to the hidden tunnels, but oh no, the hole has been repaired. In fact, the wall is now made of drywall and it is blue. Still more construction that Sarah was able to complete super quietly. And they're now all trapped in the closet because a housekeeper has arrived. They have like whispered expositional arguments about why Sarah would stalk them, whether Allison believes that the hole existed or that Sarah loved Charlotte, etc. The housekeeper heads to the bathroom. The liars sneak out right before the housekeeper pulls off her lifelike coconut oil mask.
Oh, she removes her face. I know, like, Emily wants to show Allie the closet, which is going to be difficult because Allie is already in the closet. The alliances here are so fuzzy and confusing. Like, this episode, or at least this scene, seems to set up this idea that there's, like, this Sarah-Allie alliance, potentially. But, like, all we've really seen is Sarah suggesting that alliance to Allison and Allison, like, thinking about it. Like, there's not really been anything to suggest that, like, Sarah and Allie are, like, truly aligned in any way. So, I don't remember what the ultimate reveal is with, like, the drywall and all of that. I feel like we're increasingly entering an era where, like, the A stuff is, like, it's magical, but not in the fun, you know, hyper-adrenalized reality way. It's more in the, we don't want to deal with this plot contrivance, so it just no longer exists anymore way.
Yeah, I definitely agree with that. And I was actually thinking, because we were talking about, like, the A tags, and, like, recently we saw one where, like, A was down there, and they were, like, polishing up the dollhouse equipment and stuff like that. And then in this episode where the entrance to the tunnel has been like covered over, I do not remember this for sure or not, but do we ever go back down in the Radley tunnels again?
I feel like it comes back in like season 7. Like,
yeah, I think Spencer and Caleb are down there like maybe one time that I can think of with yeah. flashlights. In the scene where it's clear they're going to have an affair someday. But other than that, I don't remember much happening down there. So we'll have to watch as that unfolds.
It's so funny that you say that. Cause like, that is exactly what I think of when I think of that scene. This is like, in 5 years, we are going to be secretly having sex. Like that's we've agreed to that. Okay, great. So going to my theory that there's a correlation between the previous Lees and the shush, I believe that Emily gets both this week. After the credits, we go over to the barn where, you know, the whole big conflict last episode with Caleb and this file was that he couldn't corrupt Veronica's medical file without leaving a trace. And, you know, he was kind of snappy with Spencer about all of this. Well, now he's just successfully corrupted the file. No problem, no trace, no worries. Great. So glad we are dealing with conflicts off screen. Spencer is still worried about an ambush regarding this medical information, but Caleb suggests that, you know, she should probably keep it to herself for now. He wants to make her breakfast. They're cute. They start kissing. Then Emily walks in, and there's a little beat here that I love and that I wish we got like more of this energy, where Emily is clearly very uncomfortable witnessing Spencer and Caleb kiss, like you would be if, like, you know, your friend's ex-boyfriend was now making out with your other friend. Emily is also, she's wearing like a kind of denim-y romper for most of this episode. She is on her way to Hollis, but she wants Spencer to go back down to the tunnels with her. Side note, how are they going to get down there if the entrance has been sealed up? That was a question that I had.
Well, presumably they would go and they would find the exit that they came out of, like, because they know.
I guess so.
But, I mean, who's to say?
The exit that nobody else has ever witnessed, apparently.
Yes, yes, or the exit, as the case may be.
Yes. Well, speaking of which, Emily thinks that Sarah is hiding under the Radley with her eggs, which is just a bonkers image. Like, I feel like I picture Sarah as like a falcon, like crouched around like a nest of you know, bird eggs or something. And I guess she thinks that maybe Sarah is going to use the eggs unless they come forward about what they maybe know about Charlotte's murder. Spencer and Caleb exchange a telling look, and Spencer owns up about the suitcase rod, which Caleb very quickly claims could crack someone's neck. No, it could not. Spencer gets pretty defensive about the idea that Melissa might have had something to do with this. She throws back to Emily that anyone who loves them wanted to kill Charlotte, and should they add Pam to the suspect list as well. This is like, this feels like just a lot of like kind of word salad about like murder weapons, murder suspect.
Yeah. Also, Emily is creating like a wild rumpus of speculation in every like scene that she's in. Like, yeah. Here she's like, she assumes that Sarah Harvey is the one who has her eggs.
Right.
And that like both Sarah and the eggs are hiding under the Radley. Like, that's just the premise that she's running with here.
Yes. Yes. She, yeah, it's really, she's taken some wild swings here.
So Arya is talking to Liam, freaking out about how and when to tell Prezra that she was ghostwriting his book. She's afraid that she will be fired. I mean, hot take, she should be. But Liam thinks that Prezra is lucky she cared about him enough to want to save his crummy reputation.
And there's definitely a vibe I feel that Liam is like kind of getting off on this. Like, did you get that feeling as well? Like, there's a lot of him kind of like smirking and smiling when talking about this situation. And I'm like, what's your deal here, Liam? Like, what is it? Just the idea that Arya's writing might be getting acknowledged in some way? I'm not sure.
I mean, maybe, but I think that Liam, we know that they're sort of secret. They're having a secret office romance. Their coworkers allegedly don't know and stuff like that. So I think that Liam kind of like, and when he was like giving her that like boyish grin and like, oh, there's a fine line between trouble and high adventure. Like, I think he thinks of Arya as his little manic pixie dream girl, and that they're going to be getting into like, you know, they're going to get into something here. They're going to get into some zany adventures.
Some hijinks. Mm-hmm. Although I do get the sense towards the end of this scene when Arya kind of snaps that it's not that simple. Like, Liam might be just starting to pick up on the fact that like there's something a little weird going on here.
Well, yeah, it's never fun when your hijinks come home to roost.
Exactly. Much like Sarah Harvey and the eggs. So Hannah is showing potential wedding dresses to Ella that she brought back from New York. My question for this storyline is Ella paying Hannah? Because Hannah sure seems to think so. And I'm not sure if Ella is in agreement about that. Ella says that she feels guilty that Hannah is focusing on her wedding instead of Hannah's own. Hannah, though, she doesn't mind. She's enjoying helping out. And Ella tells the horrible story of her first wedding to Byron, how they rented a barn and dressed up as cowhands. Just two cynical college kids, a couple of no-name slobs. Ella wants to feel like more of an elegant bride this time around, and she also would like to see what Hannah has picked out for herself, but Hannah gets kind of squirrely and quickly changes the subject to focus back on Ella's wedding.
I definitely think that Hannah will get paid because Ella is so non-confrontational, even if she wasn't planning to pay Hannah. All Hannah would have to do is be like, okay, you owe me $5,000. And then Ella would just be like, she would have like, yeah, I think that that's probably how that would go.
Yeah. I don't know if it's just that she was sharing scenes with Ashley Benson this episode, or if she's always been this way or what. Ella seemed particularly like chilly and checked out to me in this episode.
Oh, interesting. I thought she seemed real gossipy, but like also she's marrying Byron, so she needs to take her mind off it somehow.
Yeah, yeah, it's true. Good point.
All right. So Emily is in line for the bursar's office, and she meets Damien, who wants to borrow a pen to write out a paper check to the college that he will be handing over in person. He also bonds with her over taking intro to psych and invites her to attend a lecture by the professor that evening. This is a strange interaction because it's ambiguous as to whether he's flirting with her or whether he knows that she was one of the kidnap survivors. And it also makes no sense as to why Emily would agree to go anywhere with a random guy that she met in this line. Have you learned nothing from your Cousin Nate experience, Emily Fields? Also, notes on the economy of Rosewood, you apparently pay with paper checks and register for your classes in person. Okay.
Yeah, this is like another moment of like Emily can't be openly queer anymore, because like I feel like any woman who looks like Shay Mitchell does, who is gay in this situation, would be like, oh, this man is trying to ask me out on a date, and like we need to clarify a few things before I like agree to this outing. It is wild to me that she's just like, oh, sure, yeah, absolutely. Like, no, that is simply not how interactions in the real world work, my friends. Over at the House of Hastings, Spencer arrives home to find Melissa, who says that she needs a long hot shower, and she is carrying a suitcase that is notably not her broken one, which she apparently tossed. In walks Veronica, who is on frayed nerves. Spencer chooses this moment to go for broke, saying that Veronica should have told them that the cancer came back. Veronica claims that there was no reason to do so. She got a clean bill of health, but Spencer is understandably hurt, saying that there's every reason, and if Spencer found out, so could the constituents. And she, you know, when Veronica is saying that her doctor supported the idea of her still running, Spencer counters by saying, how about letting her support Veronica? She says that she was planning on telling them after the election. Gil begged her not to share this. Here I took the note, wouldn't it make a lot more sense if Peter and Veronica were just divorced at this point? Like, I feel like the way that they have written, Peter is so not a fixture, and the way that they've written all of this, like, I feel like it would actually make a lot more sense if Veronica was, like, running as a single woman, and, like, that was creating more of the pressure and more of the, like, I can't, you know, reveal any weakness kind of thing. Also, she says, like, I was going to tell you and Melissa after I was elected, so she doesn't even mention Peter. Spencer urges Veronica to not let herself be blindsided, that Veronica was the one who taught her to have grace under fire. And then she's like, thanks for reminding me why I did this. Spencer's like, you're going to be a great senator. And Veronica's like, no, thanks for reminding me why I had kids. And it's like, you needed that reminder, Veronica? Like, I don't think this is the sweet, touching mother-daughter moment that you think it is. But then she says, you get the chance to make people better than yourself, and they embrace.
Okay, content check. We are a quarter of the way through. Has anything happened in this episode yet?
Good question. Nothing of consequence. A lot of talking.
So Allison is grading papers on the couch, and Rollins is mucking about in the kitchen. Allie gets a text from New A that asks, does the good doctor know why Charlotte ran out of your house that night? I do. For absolutely no reason, the house is, and, you know, the house is an imagee, and we get another devil face.
Yeah, it is kind of hilarious, the idea that this person could be Sarah Harvey, and that they're using emojis simply because it's less work for their, like, ailing hands. It is a bit funny. Also, once again, like, Allie is just, like, sitting on a couch swaddled in fabric. Because that's... Yep. That's all that happens with her these days. So Arya is picking at her salad while at lunch with Byron. And out of the blue, he proposes that Arya officiate the wedding. This is an enormous ask. Arya isn't so sure about this. She doesn't want Mike to feel left out. Hey, everybody, remember Mike? But Byron says that Mike won't be here. He doesn't support the marriage, which is kind of a red flag about the marriage. And he doesn't trust that Byron won't hurt Ella again. Arya says she will work on the ceremony tonight. Well, didn't that little manipulation work out so nicely for Byron Montgomery?
Yeah. Well, also, he says that Mike isn't going to come, probably because he's never really forgiven Byron for why he and Ella split in the first place, which, like, what a neat trick. Like, no pressure, but clearly the implication is that, like, not being fully on board with this ceremony means you don't love your father. And also, it's just real clear that he wants this ceremony to be, like, an orgy of how much everyone forgives him. Like, he's probably pushing Ella for her vows to include the phrase, "I was the one in the wrong for divorcing you the last time around." Like, to him, this remarriage signals that the breakup, not his infidelity, was the real mistake.
Right, right. If everybody could just, like, calm down and forgive the good white man, all would be well.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I mean, everyone just really overreacted to his, like, long-term deception in which he involved his daughter, in addition to the, you know, infidelity that he was going on with and, like, the graduate student he was sleeping with, etc.
Who almost killed his daughter. Lest we forget.
Details, details. Also, Arya, like, tries so hard to say no to this. Like, for Montgomery, she really gives it a go to, like, decline this. She's like, her first thing is, like, "I'm not a minister," which, like, Arya, he knows that. Like, that's not gonna be a roadblock in this situation. And then, like, second, she's like, "Oh, but what about Mike?" He's like, "Forget Mike. He's in the outer darkness. Like, you know, he doesn't care about that." No. So she tries to say no twice. And then when it gets to the, like, "Oh, if you don't want to marry us, that means no one forgives me," then she has to, like, fall all over herself to prove how delighted she is to, like, co-sign his complete forgiveness.
Yeah, it's really something. It's really something.
Gosh. Oh, man, from that scene to this one, Spencer is filling Caleb in on Allison getting an A text. They're, like, leaving the Hastings compound when they notice Melissa sitting in her car talking on the phone. Now, this seems like an everyday action, but because it's Melissa, this seems inherently suspicious. Once she gets out of the car and tells them that her trip was a success, there's a 12% bump in the polls. Caleb and Spencer do not want to talk polls, though. They want to ask Melissa all about her broken suitcase. She stonewalls them, then eventually gives them a story that she noticed it was broken when she took it out of the cab in Philly. The driver had taken a lot of potholed streets to avoid baseball traffic. We have kind of a cute Nick and Nora Charles moment after Melissa walks away of Spencer and Caleb bantering about their murder suspicions. And then when I called them Nick and Nora Charles, I was like, wow, they drink like they're in the Thin Man too this season. So maybe that's kind of what they're going for. Anyway, after their moment of banter, Caleb significantly announces that two Saturdays ago, the Phillies were playing an away game. So the traffic Melissa is talking about would have been in Baltimore. Let's just point out that this is, like, the first and only time we will ever hear Caleb say anything about baseball. But apparently he is, because he is a man, he is an authority on the schedule of all sporting events.
Much like how he had to, like, mansplain golf to Arya a couple of weeks ago. Like, as the man here in the show, he knows about all sports and all hacking abilities, apparently, too. I think, like, again, I was like, this is... So in the little, like, Melissa, Spencer, Caleb sitcom of my dreams, like, this is like a B plot that, you know, like, it's not maybe the greatest episode, but, like, it's still fun. Like, it's still enjoyable. These three play off of each other really well. I still do think the idea of a show where they're all trying to live together in the barn would be very fun.
I mean, I don't disagree with you. I feel like from Melissa's standpoint, like, because we know that her luggage poll did not murder anyone. So, like, from Melissa's perspective, like, every interaction with Spencer and Caleb must just be like, what are they talking about now?
Like, is this a kink of theirs or something? Do they get off on, like, just interrogating people for no reason? I mean,
Spencer tells her, like, Caleb is just interested in finding out when the suitcase broke because he's really into fixing things. It's like, Melissa already threw the suitcase away.
Also, in what universe would running over a pothole cause that part of a suitcase to be ripped off?
It is a mystery.
It really is. So just to clarify that thing, weak enough to just like pop off if you were driving over a pothole, strong enough to murder somebody. So like it's pretty, that's pretty impressive. Yeah, it wears a lot of hats, that little rod.
Flimsy, but also deadly.
Exactly. Flimsy, but deadly. I feel like that's like, that could be like Arya's, like if Arya was like on The Real Housewives, like her little phrase would be like, I'm flimsy, but deadly. Speaking of Arya, she is clearly in the immediate aftermath of having owned up to the book ghostwriting to Prezra. She begs him to talk this through with her. He says in like this very kind of low serial killer voice, Arya, it's done. You've already submitted 6 chapters. Arya gets in like the crash position. Like she like has her hands like over her ears as she admits that Jillian liked it. She's kind of hesitant. He asks her to give him a number and she's like 9. Well, 8.5. Arya says that she will tell Jillian the truth, but he says that she can't do that. He knows that she was trying to protect him. She says a line that is very eyebrow raising, which is she can't tell if he wants to hug her or punch her. He replies, how could he want to punch her? She was, you know, acting with her heart. And this wasn't an act of business. This was an act of love. They could turn in all of it. He wants to read what she wrote. And she agrees, kind of reluctantly. This might be one of my favorite scenes of the episode, shockingly. Like, Prezria has somehow become the most interesting part of this show. I am more surprised than anyone else. But, like, I love the idea of, similar to Byron, actually, manipulating Arya in the previous scene, the way that Prezra is, like, interpreting this as, well, this was an act of love. It's so similar also to the way that he acted after Arya killed Shauna and he got shot in New York, where it was like every interaction between them, he was twisting to be like, well, this is just because we're made to be with each other. And this is just because it's love. And like, this is just what it is, you know? And I love how Arya through this whole scene has this vibe of like, she's realizing the depths of what she's gotten herself into very slowly. Like at first she was like, okay, this was just like this sort of stupid mistake that I made and it was dumb and maybe I'll get fired. And now she's like, oh, now this is getting like into some like weird Prezra shit. And like, you just kind of see her through this scene, kind of realizing that. And the way she hands him the pages at the end of this scene, Lucy is so good here. Ian is great here. Like, I just love how twisted this whole situation has become.
I really agree. And like from this scene on, like you can read all of their interactions as he is determined that she is going to be back in his web ere long,
oh, yeah.
Which we definitely know is true. But also like you just think of like the times when Prezra is like the happiest with their relationship. And they are 100% the times when he is able to point to something and say like, look at all this that I do for you. And it's like, in the beginning, it's like,
yes.
I endanger my teaching career for you. And then later it's like, I gave up my teaching career for you. I got thrown out by my family for you. I, you know, got shot on a rooftop in New York for you. I give up my book for you. Like, you know,
yeah.
He's always, always, always doing that. And so like, here Arya is handing him a chance to be like, I let you get out of this trouble about ghostwriting my book and I, you know, do it for you. And so this is like, she's just handing him, this is like catnip to this dude, or like predator nip as the case may be.
Yeah, it's great. And the way that it's like, you know, it went from this whole murder thing of, you know, I guess I should be flattered that you thought I'd murder somebody for you, to this, like, it's just, God, they're so twisted, and yet they're like the most interesting part of the show right now.
Yes, I totally agree. So Hannah has found a dress for Ella, but she's going to need to hem it. Otherwise, Ella's going to need to borrow Emily's legs in order to walk in it. Now, in addition to that weird carpet-looking comment, this was like a weird, like, this is weird for like one of the parents to be commenting on Emily's body in that way, but okay. I mean, I guess all the women on the show have thought about Emily's legs. That just must be the canon of it. So, all right.
At least Emily's legally an adult now.
That's true. That is true. Hannah negotiates doing the centerpieces for the wedding as well. And then Aria arrives home. They talk about how Aria is officiating and Hannah is working the wedding. And then Aria feels awkward because she didn't invite any of her friends because she was trying to be sensitive and not make Hannah sit 2 feet away from Spaleb at a wedding ceremony. Hannah's like, I have no problem with Spaleb. She's happy. This is happy. Aria bites her lip and does not believe her, probably because Ashley looks dead behind the eyes.
Yeah, I would love if we actually got to see more of, like, Hannah and Spaleb interacting beyond just, like, sort of furtive glances and, like, you know, like, Hannah lingering, looking at Caleb for a minute longer. Like, it feels like they don't really know how to address this. And so they're, like, kind of having other characters address it. But, like, you know, it's funny. They have, you know, she has this line about, like, well, I didn't want to, you know, set up this scenario where you guys would be at the wedding. It's like, well, that's the scene. Like, give us the scene where they're at the wedding and it's awkward. Like, don't just tell us, like, oh, we could have had this interesting scene. We're not going to do it, though, because it would have been awkward.
Well, you know, the other thing that I find weird about, like, the extent to which all of the other characters are constantly doing, like, a wellness check on Hannah Rees-Spaleb is that, like, we have said so many times, why isn't anyone talking to Emily about Allison? And it's like, that is, like, what we've always wanted. We've always wanted somebody to be like, so, what's going on with your, like, long-term being in love with Allison now? This is, like, nobody ever says this stuff to Emily, but, like, everyone is just falling all over themselves to be like, hey, Hannah, does it bother you that Spencer and Caleb are together? Does it bother you? Does it bother you now? Like, here, let me show you a picture of them. Let me show you another picture of them. Like, here's a video of them kissing. Like, what?
I totally agree. That's such a good point. Also weird is that nobody is, like, seemingly checking in with Spencer about it, which also, like, makes me kind of feel like, I don't know, like, that feels a little weird. Like, if that feels a little, like, one-sided or something. It feels like there's a vibe that, like, if the Spaleb relationship caused the friendship, like, caused it to be a thing where, like, you have to choose, like, Team Spencer or Team Hannah, there's kind of a vibe that Aria and Emily would both choose Team Hannah at this point because nobody is talking to Spencer about Spaleb.
Yeah, or talking to Spencer at all.
Right, exactly. Yeah.
In this episode.
Well, there's also the weird thing where because of Spaleb, it's like so many of the scenes that Spencer might share with the other liars, now she's sharing with Caleb, which I like Spaleb, but, like, that's not what I want, you know? Oh, another thing that I do not want is this next scene, which is Allie and Rollins sitting on the porch. Allie just sort of, like, it's weird because the beginning of the scene implies that, like, Allie's been, you know, not speaking, and then she just suddenly spills. Like, it's badly paced. Not the worst part of the scene, but it's badly paced. Allison says that the night Charlotte came home, they stayed up late talking, and Allison told her that she and Rollins were dating. Allie says that Charlotte stared like a cat. Then went upstairs. She felt betrayed, and that is why she ran out in the middle of the night. Allison says that she might have delivered her sister to whoever did this to her. But Rollins, like, he also wants to take the emotional fall. He says that if anybody betrayed Charlotte, it was him. Of course, the thing that Allison doesn't know is that he was also carrying on with Charlotte at that time. This is just, you know, it's like a bowl of oatmeal talking to a bowl of buttered noodles, you know?
Yeah. Well, also why Allison would not at this point be considering Rollins a suspect is, like, the realest mystery of all.
Oh, sure. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Super, super, super weird. So Hannah returns to the loft just in time to hear about how Emily is heading out to a lecture with her new pal, Damien, and just in time for a video call from Damien that lets Hannah see his face and feel like he looks familiar right before showing Emily a box of books that have arrived at the loft for her. Alas, they are not textbooks. They are baby naming books. And there's a bookmark with a message that says, "You better start talking before our baby does. When Emily mentions being tortured by Sarah Harvey for something that Melissa may have done, Hannah is surprised to learn that Melissa is now a prime suspect and may not have been in London during the murder after all. Seriously, are we still surprised that Melissa was not in London when something suspicious happened? Like, isn't this the same conversation that we have about Melissa, like, every time Melissa's name comes up?
Yeah, like, she was or was not in London. Like, it's sort of like a Schrodinger's cat situation.
Yes!
Yeah. Yeah, I also just, like, I get that they had to have it be that Damien FaceTimed Emily so that Hannah could see him. But, like, oh my God, this is, like, the wildest, most aggressive move to pull on, like, a new acquaintance. Also, keep in mind that during this FaceTime call, Damien says that he is, seems to imply that he's already at the event waiting in line. This will be important later. So Spencer and Caleb are watching the news footage of Veronica sharing her cancer scare. They are at the brew when Hannah walks in. She sort of looks at them, takes a breath, and then sits down asking if Spencer got her messages. She thinks that Melissa could have done it, and we go to a flashback. Do you want to take this flashback or shall I? Feel like you should take this flashback because it has some Missy vibes in it.
Okay, I would be totally, totally happy to. So in the flashback, Hannah is running into Melissa in London. I think this is actually maybe the best scene of the episode. Melissa yeah. has her hair up. She's elegantly drunk and unbalanced, so much so that she brought her drink into the bathroom. You know how I feeling about that. She and Hannah greet each other, and Hannah wonders what Melissa is doing at Fashion Week. Melissa came with a friend who has now ditched her because she spent the night weeping into her phone. Hannah asks how Ren is, and Melissa says that he's gone. He left her. And it's because Charlotte called him, and whatever she said made Ren look at Melissa like she should be the one who gets locked up. Hannah thinks it was probably Bethany-related, but I feel sure it was actually the sordid details of Melissa and Charlotte's affair. Anyway, Melissa vaguely threatens Hannah, saying that we all have a past. What part of Hannah's is Charlotte going to use against her? Hannah says that, you know, she tries not to think about her, forgive and forget, etc. Melissa vehemently disagrees and thinks someone needs to shut Charlotte up for good. She grabs Hannah's phone and she dials Charlotte's number at the mental hospital from memory. Then pretends to be Allison and demands to speak to her sister. Like, this just occurred to her. It just occurred to her to do this. She had the number already in her brain and the idea to pretend to be Allison in order to get to talk to Charlotte. Hannah tries to grab the phone back, eventually shouting that she does not want to hear Charlotte's voice. Then she flings the phone against the mirror and it cracks, which gets Melissa what she wants, which is the chance to gloat about how Hannah has actually not forgiven Charlotte. Also, hilariously, after you described the last episode as walking slow circles around a room, that's the actual blocking for when Melissa grabs the phone. Hannah kind of like half-heartedly trails after her as they circle this really fancy Ottoman poof in this lush London bathroom. I'm taking Hannah's word for it that they're in London, because the set dressers have not decked the space out with 5,000 Union Jacks, nor have they crammed a double-decker bus into one of the stalls. Anyway, Charlotte's ability to press Melissa's buttons is undeniable. And if you take all of this at Melissa's word, Ren was just gaslighting her to a viciously cruel level.
Oh, yeah. Ren was really, he was playing a whole lot of games going on here. Yeah, this is a really interesting scene. I feel like PLL does this. They've done other versions of this where it's like you have two characters and they start the scene and one of the characters seems to be sort of the calm in control one and the other one seems to be like the unhinged one. And by the end, those roles have kind of flipped. And I really like the way that manifests here with Hannah kind of shouting and throwing her phone. Yeah, this is really fun. Like, Tori DeVito is great in this scene as drunk Melissa. I feel like if this, like, if PLL was on, like, Showtime or HBO, like, she'd be, like, offering Hannah some coke or something. Like, that's kind of the vibe that she's giving off here. But yeah, this is just, this is great. I love this sort of weird bit of backstory between Charlotte and Melissa. I like too that it's like Hannah guesses that it's about Bethany Young, but you know, like you said, like Melissa is vague here. Like she's vague in terms of what actually happened. So I appreciate that.
Yeah, she definitely seems to feel like there are a number of things that Charlotte could tell Ren that might cause him to have some second thoughts.
For sure, for sure. That Charlotte is a keeper of a lot of Melissa's secrets.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And I really like Hannah and Melissa is an unusual character combination. We don't get a ton of interaction. And also seeing them interact outside of Rosewood and outside of Spencer... Yeah. I feel like that's also really interesting. I like this scene a lot.
Do you think there's a world in which you could ship these two characters, Melissa and
I was thinking that, yes. After I saw this scene, I was thinking about like, is there a version of this where like this interaction goes a different way, or after this interaction ends, we get like Hannah and Melissa making out. And I think that there is.
Wouldn't it be great if there's it just like cuts like smash cut to them like waking up in Melissa's hotel or in like Hannah's hotel room, and it's like, oh wow, like
that would be great.
Hannah's to Spencer, she's like, Spencer, you may be sleeping with my ex-boyfriend, but I slept with your sister. Also, just Melissa pretending to be Allison via Hannah's phone is so great. Like, just the layers there, so good.
It is truly amazing. And also, I would like to point out, like, when you were talking about, you know, it seems like this character is the one who's a mess and this character is the one who's in control, Melissa seems drunker at the beginning of the scene than she does at the end. Like, even though she's like a little tipsy, and even though we see her like, you know, downing the rest of her bathroom drink in like one big gulp, she also like can still dial a number from memory on someone else's phone.
Very true. Very true. So in the present day, you know, Caleb, of course, his first thing has to be an accusation about why Hannah didn't tell him this. Spencer realizes, though, saying that Hannah didn't want another person telling her that she wasn't over it, which is one of, I would say, the better lines of this episode. It's Hannah who wants to know if Melissa was the one who called Charlotte. Is that how that's how that works, right? And then Hannah, who, like, I feel like it's like Hannah's actually kind of doing a lot on the mystery this week. She asks what the name of the blogger dude was, because her suspicions have been raised by that weird FaceTime call.
Yeah, speaking of the weird blogger dude, Damien is asking Emily about why she's back here in Rosewood. He's asking questions. Emily is like, you know, mildly evasive. He wants them to get coffee. Emily agrees, but then gets a text from Hannah saying that Damien is a reporter. Lose him. And instead of following this advice, Emily invites Damien to dinner.
It's weird. She has a very sort of like murderous glee look on her face when she does that. So I'm wrong. I got the vibe that this was all happening like before this talk, but I guess it would have to be after because they're walking around.
I mean, time is like meaningless in this episode.
It really
is. Because they're not like talking about the event that they've just been to.
And it's
And it's daylight. Yes. And it's super unclear why Emily wants to prolong this interaction with this guy at all. Again, it's like, is this a date? What does he think is happening? What does she think is happening? What's actually happening? Has anything happened? It's all a bit of a muddle.
I also don't see any reason why Damien couldn't be a woman. Like,
oh yeah.
Like, Damien could totally be a woman, and, like, I feel like a lot of this would make more sense. Yeah. It's weird. So over at the Radley Bar, Liam approaches Prezra And, you know, there's like this kind of awkward interaction about, you know, how, oh, it should be fun to go to Byron and Ella's wedding in a going to a parent's wedding sort of way. Prezra explains that Arya is meeting him here to go over the pages. Liam says that he's excited about the book, about the characters. And Prezra, man to man, just wants to put it out there that the protagonist is this girl that he traveled with, not Arya. It's just another small, petite woman who eerily looks a lot like Arya and sounds a lot like Arya and is underage like Arya was. Liam looks absolutely crestfallen as Arya suddenly walks in. And I love, like, Arya, the look on Arya's face is just like, oh, shit. Like, she just, like, she is like, this is not good. This is not good. She rushes over and, you know, tries to kind of figure out how long they've been talking and what they've been talking about. Liam quips that Mr. Fitz is, you know, eager to get his feedback. And Arya kind of chases Liam to the elevator. He reveals that he, you know, knows that they were involved, that they were a couple. And, you know, is that why she's been so anxious to get back to Rosewood? Now, I get that this is like a shocking revelation, but if I were Liam, I would have a lot more questions than huffy anger at this point.
Yeah. Well, here are my thoughts on this. Like, does Arya owe Liam the story of her and Fitz? Like, not necessarily. Your past is your past, and you get to decide, like, what is or is not important information to share. But I do think as soon as it became clear that she and Liam were going to be in a business relationship with Prezra, she definitely should have told him. Like, if nothing else, she should know Prezra well enough to know that he's going to take any chance to play the I know and understand Arya better than you, and that he would throw a wrench into her relationship at the first opportunity. And, like, not telling Liam keeps him on the outside of the circle. Like, it lets the circle be just Prezra and Arya who know about their past, and Liam is, like, not one of the people who's in on it. It makes him look foolish. It makes him the odd man out. Plus, this information is vital context for absolutely everything that Arya has been doing these last many weeks. Like, she covers for Prezra out of habit. She wants everyone to think he's a good man so that she can remain convinced he's a good man, etc. And, like, also, Prezra constructed this whole thing 110% on purpose.
Oh, completely, completely Prezra did. I think it's also, like, a piece of this that I think will get explored more in the next several episodes, but is definitely present here, is, like, is this the story of Arya's former relationship with her English teacher, or is this the story of how Arya was the victim of a rapist when she was a child? And it's like, I feel like the framing of that story and, like, how she should reveal it to Liam and what she should reveal it to Liam, like, depending on how you frame that story, that impacts how, when, and why this might be revealed to Liam.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. Definitely agree. So we cut to Arya in pizza pajamas, leaving another voicemail for Liam. Call her back, but not after 5 p.m., as she'll be marrying her parents. This officially marks day 2 of this episode, but time is very hard to pin down in Rosewood in this one. So,
you know, I think I've had this thought before, but I really had this thought watching this scene. I think it was because Arya was in her melty pizza pajamas, which reminded me of Buffy's yummy sushi pajamas. I was like, Lucy Hale would have made a great Buffy. Like, if they did, like, an, you know, like, an early 2000s, like, well, I guess Buffy was early, like, early 2010s, like, Buffy, Lucy Hale, I think, would have been a really fun Buffy.
I totally agree.
She would have been great. So Ella can't remember if she has eaten today, which, like, just a little flag of, you know, we've talked about the weirdness of, like, when women are in times of stress on this show, they simply don't eat, which has happened with Ella, actually, in the past, also with Hannah in the past, while Hannah pins her gown. Ella says that when she sees Byron, it's like she's 19 again. And wow, this is just all such a thesis statement for the show, insisting that first love is the only love that matters, because Hannah suggests that people who are meant to be together, they take a break and they find their way back to their first love. And isn't it romantic? But Ella says Byron wasn't her first love. He was some other dude and they graduated and grew up. And just then Jordan calls. And, you know, it's like the themes are basically being spelled out in subtitles on the screen during this whole scene.
Yeah, that was a really nice story about how Ella dated some guy who no one got into OTP wars over. So they were allowed to grow apart and break up, as people do.
Yeah, yeah. Not in Hannah's reality, though.
Speaking of people who should break up, Allison is eating a muffin outside a cafe and reading the text message from, you know, devil emoji. She writes back to the text to ask, Sarah, is that you? Rollins comes over and sits down and passive-aggressively calls her out for avoiding him for all of less than a day, I guess? Like, are they living together that she was giving him the cold shoulder and not speaking to him? Very weird. He calls her guilt unnecessary. And for a supposed therapist, he really doesn't give her an opportunity to talk about her feelings at all. What he does do, though, is tell her that he wants to spend the rest of his life with her. He looks especially pasty and unappealing here, but Allison is, again, inexplicably charmed. What does that mean? She asks, clearly hoping he will actually propose. Exactly what you think it means, he says, still not actually asking her to marry him out loud. This is horrid, but is it more or less romantic than the Emerson pugprosal?
I think in some ways it's not as bad because, first of all, Sasha doesn't have those bangs. And second of all, like she smiles in this scene and her smile is so pretty. And I don't remember if she smiles in the pugprosals.
Yeah, and nobody has a tone with each other. Nobody is snapping at each other in this scene, which I feel like automatically makes it a little more romantic.
No one is passively aggressively insulting anybody's mother, you know. It's, yeah.
Yeah, like someone is eating a muffin, which I still think is probably better than like folding laundry. Isn't someone folding laundry in the pugprosal?
It's just generally bad. I had the same note though that like for a therapist, he is just really not really selling it here. Yeah.
No.
Yeah. I do like when Allison is just like, I'm feeling a lot of things, which like I bet you are, Allison. Wish we got to have a window into any of them. So Spencer arrives back at the House of Hastings with a warm hug of congratulations for her mom. But there is some anxious eye chatter between Melissa and Veronica. We learn that a story that could affect the Phillips campaign is coming out. The story is about Yvonne, and it's that she had an abortion. This has come out via a medical report leak and is a problem considering that the Phillips campaign is running on a pro-life platform. Melissa rather gleefully seems to suggest that Spencer or Caleb are responsible for this report getting out there.
Yes. Spencer, meanwhile, looks kind of baffled by all of this.
She does. Yeah. Yeah.
So now it is night again, and Emily is leaving a lengthy voicemail for Hannah. Apparently, off screen, yesterday, she got it out of Damien that Melissa returned before the night Charlotte was killed. And then Emily ceased to exist or something, because who knows what she was doing during the day that she saved a visit to this diner for the middle of the night. And she also apparently hasn't seen or spoken to Hannah all day, despite the fact that they are both living together in the loft. So she leaves this lengthy voicemail about how Melissa could have called from the diner, which appears to be closed. Emily walks around, staring in the windows, and then is nearly hit by a monster truck. She is in front of the diner when the truck kind of roars back. And this is meant to be the big suspense of the episode. And the truck certainly is big and loud. Its headlights are very bright. but it doesn't especially seem to be near to hitting her. And also at one point, it looks like she's trying to hide from the truck, but winds up running in front of it. That's so Emily.
Yeah, it really does seem like she is running, like trying to maybe get hit by this truck. Yeah, and it's weird too, because it's like a light goes on in the diner, but it's like, it's unclear if that's, if somebody's actually in there, like it's unclear, like if it's like somebody, you know, if this is two people working together. Also the lighting in this scene is so bad that it's just really generally like hard to tell what's going on.
Oh yeah. I was not sure if a light went on inside the diner or if it was like the lights of the truck from the other side of the diner.
It could have been, I'm not entirely certain. Yeah. So over at the wedding, Arya is officiating. Are we ready to be with another person before we truly know ourselves? She claims that her parents are loving, wise, and sensitive, but together they are inspiring. Are Hannah and Caleb the Byron and Ella of the time jump? Thoughts? Also, I think that Arya kind of half-assed this assignment. There are no personalized vows. Arya says, Dad, you may kiss Mom. When they part, Liam is standing between them.
I agree that Arya, but I mean, on the other hand, she only had like one day. Like, she was pressed into service on very short notice.
Yes. Yeah. She kind of had to scrape this together.
So Emily is holding her phone out and walking in the middle of the diner parking lot where she has recently been fleeing from the truck. The truck naturally comes back. Emily naturally falls to the ground while running away, and again naturally drops her phone. She rolls away, but her phone is run over and smashed. Emily rushes back to the building and climbs a conveniently located ladder to get on the roof. As she clambers up, her hand falls on a metal pole from a luggage rack, which just happens to be up there on the roof.
Which it sort of is played as like this is all an elaborate ploy to get Emily's fingerprints on it, but like, what an elaborate ploy. There are easier ways, devil emoji. So at the, like, I guess this is like kind of post-reception-ish, Arya and Liam, they're drinking some champagne. She's telling Liam about Byron and Ella's frankly horrifying sounding honeymoon. She thanks him for coming and apologizes for...
Did we skip where Spencer and Caleb were in the barn discussing whether Mona could be the leak?
Oh, we did. I'm sorry. I skipped to the other Emily on top of to post the other Emily on top of the dumpster scene. Let me go back. Apologies. Caleb thinks that it can't be Mona because he like very creepily physically threatened her. They wonder whether Sarah Harvey could be responsible for the leak. In walks Veronica, announcing that the leak traces back to Spencer's IP address, and Veronica is certain that Spencer did this. Caleb stands up, claiming that he was the one who did it. Veronica tells him to resign and leave the barn. Wouldn't it have been kind of great if, like, Caleb actually had leaked it, and, like, he was kind of pretending to, like, take the fall for it, for something he didn't do when he actually did do it? Because it feels like something he would do without consulting Spencer.
Agree 100%.
Yeah.
So Emily is still on the roof of the diner, dumpster, whatever she's on the roof of. And you know how when you might play peekaboo with a baby and it's like, oh, you can't see me, I must be gone, here I am. This is essentially the game that Emily and this truck are playing. The truck goes out of sight for 2 seconds, and Emily is like, I can't see you. You must be gone. And then the truck roars back like, peekaboo, bitch. I am very predictably still here. Emily rushes back to climb up the ladder again, which she just climbed down, and more predictably still, drops the luggage pole, maybe murder weapon, to the ground. Then Emily kind of hides on the roof so that the truck can't see her, even though whoever is driving the truck clearly knows she's up there. They just saw her climb that ladder. But this is necessary so that Emily does not see whoever gets out of the truck and picks up the luggage rod that never killed anyone. The standoff then concludes with the truck just driving away.
Yeah, this is a very weird moment. It's just not like A will do weird, menacing stuff to the liars all the time, but like usually it's sort of clear why they're doing what they're doing, or if it's not clear, it's like unclear in a like fun chaos monster kind of way. This is just like kind of weird and boring, and it just doesn't make sense why A is going to all of this trouble to like potentially lure Emily here, potentially get Emily's fingerprints on this thing, potentially collect this thing, and then Emily's ultimate conclusion about why they did all of this doesn't make any sense either.
No, none of this makes any sense. Like we have to conclude eventually. Like, even though the ultimate thing is like, well, you know, they wanted to find out who murdered Charlotte. Everybody who's on the A-team now loved Charlotte. And they were, like, on her team and whatever, whatever. But, like, this clearly seems like someone who's just wanting to fuck with the liars. Because, like,
Yeah. Why
was the luggage pull on the roof of this thing? Why did this truck collect it and drive away? Like, is this just somebody in this truck who was like, hey, I store all my luggage poles on the roof of this diner, and this Emily Fields is not going to climb up there and steal it from me. No, sir.
Exactly. This is my storage place. Yeah. So finally, we're at the scene that I was apparently so eager to talk about, which is post-wedding, Aria is telling Liam about Byron and Ella's really pretty horrifying sounding honeymoon. She thanks him for coming. She apologizes for not being honest. He asks why she held back. And she says that she thinks she wasn't being honest with herself. It was confusing. He assumes that she was writing about Prezra, which she initially denies before admitting that maybe she was. Writing those words might have been the chance for her to finally work it out. And she thinks that, you know, maybe she actually has. Once again, if I really am, I would really want some details here. Like, what was really the nature of your relationship? How old actually were you? Like, what was the situation here? Instead, he chooses to go for romance. He says, how does it end? And she says she didn't know until right now. And I actually really, like, you know, Arya and Liam, whatever. I like them more than Jordan and Hannah. I like this moment, though, because there is sort of this sense of, like, for all of the horrible dysfunction and, you know, everything that, like, the terrible relationship modeling that she's gotten from Byron and Ella, and then the, like, awful, dysfunctional, abusive relationship that she was in with Prezra, that, like, maybe she can finally be in something a little bit healthier. And the line on the song that's playing here, I really like. The line is, as they kiss, is, take apart this careful mask I made.
That is a great line for PLL.
It really is. Yeah.
So we switch over to Hannah alone in the loft. She tries on a very unflattering veil. And seeing herself in the reflection in the window with this unflattering veil is all it takes to make her call and leave Jordan a voicemail saying that she's picked a wedding date, May 17th. How does that sound to him? And that she loves him. So just for anybody who is keeping track of the voicemail acting in this episode, we have had in the past, like, you know, 15 minutes here, we had Arya leaving the lengthy voicemail for Liam. We had Emily leaving the long voicemail for Hannah, which Hannah apparently hasn't gotten. And then we have Hannah calling and leaving this message for Jordan.
Yeah, a lot of voicemail work happening. Nothing more exciting than a character leaving a voicemail. It's really good. So back over at the barn, Spencer is tearfully insisting that Caleb not leave, and that he, you know, tell Veronica the truth. He says that there needs to be a scapegoat. Let it be him. He insists that, you know, she should work on, you know, the situation with Veronica, with Melissa. She asks where he's going to go and she wants him to stay. And I really don't understand why they can't go together. Like, they're acting like Spencer has to stay at the bar, and they're being very Romeo and Juliet about all of this. And I'm like, okay, I get, you know, that Spencer doesn't want to, like, rock the boat with her mom, but she could easily go and stay with Caleb at a hotel somewhere. Like, it seems really weird that they're acting with, like, the rules of teenage dumb. Like, oh, well, Spencer just has to stay here because, like, it's her family home, which, I don't know. It seems like a really weird forced dramatic beat.
Well, yeah, I think they're saying that she needs to stay there so that she can find out about if Melissa is a murderer. But, like, it seems like there's not anything that she's going to be able to do about that in the barn than she would be able to do just, like, talking to Melissa in the regular run of their lives together as sisters.
I agree. I totally agree.
Especially because, like, when Spencer is kissing him at the end there, it definitely seems like Spencer has a sense that this might be the beginning of the end. Like, she asks him where he's going to go, and he's like, I don't know, we'll work it out. Do you think he knows where he's going to go right now?
I mean, it does feel, it's interesting, right? Because it's like, does Caleb, the character, know, or do the writers know that this couple is heading for a breakup? And so it's sort of like slightly seasoning all of their interactions. I'm not sure. I feel like sort of both things are happening a little bit. Like, one makes Caleb look like more of an asshole, but, like, it's like there's just so much sort of heavy foreshadowing going on with Spaleb right now, and it's like it's hard to tell if it's coming from, like, the characters or just the story.
Well, and it's hard to say. Like, you would kind of expect that if Caleb is leaving the barn, he's going to go to the Radley, because it's like the hotel where everyone is always at right now. And yeah. So it seems like, well, so maybe Spencer is thinking, oh no, he's going to go to the Radley. And then the Radley is kind of like the Ashley Hannah territory. Like, he's going to be kind of back in the Ashley Hannah space, which, like, in fact, he's going to move in with Ashley. So that's, like, so much, much worse.
Yeah, so joke's on you, Spencer. It could get even more personal and weird.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, man. Okay, so now we get to Emily coming back to the loft. And a new theory that makes no sense being born. Emily tells Hannah about being attacked and her phone being crushed. She now believes that there are two people who are after them. Sarah Harvey, who wants this murder solved, and someone else who wants to cover it up, since they stole the maybe murder weapon, etc. So let's count how many assumptions are being made here. One, that Sarah Harvey is the initial texter. Yeah. And two, that she wants to find out who killed Charlotte. Three, that the luggage pull is the murder weapon. Four, that the person in the truck is someone new. And five, that they are trying to cover up the murder. None of this makes any sense. And this is going to be a theory that they stick with for, like, a while. Like, the you know, cross motivations is going to be something that they're stuck on for some time. And also, it's super weird that even though they're like, hey, Sarah can, like, sneak out of the hotel, Sarah can, like, use her hands more than we think she can, why are they still assuming that Sarah is trying to find out what happened to Charlotte rather than suspecting that Sarah killed Charlotte? And why is Devil Imagé, why are they not targeting Mona? Why are they not targeting Sarah? Why are they only targeting the liars if they actually want to know who killed Charlotte? None of this makes any sense.
No, none of it makes any sense. Also, like, I know that the liars assume things about A all the time, but I think it's so funny that, like, there have been times in the past when it's been so clear that A is more than one person, and the liars have been convinced that A is only, like, one singular entity, and became really convinced of that with the whole Charlotte arc. Like, it became, you know, oh, it could only be Dead Name, and Dead Name is the one singular A of all time. And very, very quickly, Emily is like, oh, yeah, it's two people. And it's like, oh, okay. Okay, sure. When there does not seem to be anything solid connecting that to two people. I mean, why would Emily not just think, oh, A was trying to get the murder weapon, and that's why A took the pole to take it to the police, you know, or to take it to whatever. Like, yeah, it's so weird. And it's just, it's so, you know, I, for some reason, the A move that I'm thinking of is like, I'm thinking of when Hannah gets the note stuck in her teeth in season 4. And A, like, that's like a very elaborate A scheme, obviously. But A does that in order to take that file, right? To take the medical, the dental records from Hannah, and also to basically warn Hannah, like, back off. And so it's like, okay, yes, very elaborate A scheme, but it makes sense why A is doing it within the context of, like, the sense that you can ever apply to why A does anything. And it's like this business with the monster truck and the metal pole that's, you know, as flimsy as a piece of plastic, is just, it's so silly. And, like, it both doesn't make sense, and it's not, like, a fun, a menacing moment. And so it's just, like, it just feels really, really pointless.
Well, also, like, this is, like, with the sedan, like, who is in this monster truck? What are they doing? Why is this luggage rod a thing that is of any importance at all? Like, yeah, you can't answer any of those questions. And also, how lazy is the writing that, like, a big moment in several of these episodes this half season are the liars are vaguely menaced by an unknown person in a mysterious vehicle.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. You're yes. It's getting really repetitive. Really, really repetitive. So back at the Montgomery house, Arya and Liam are snuggling on the couch when there is a knock on the door. Who could it be? Allie and Rollins, clearly drunk and very cuddly. They want to get married tonight. Arya hilariously is like, I can't do that. And Rollins, really in a bitchy way, is like, she does speak English, doesn't she? It's like, shut up, Rollins. And they're like, come on, Arya, there's still twinkly lights in the backyard and you've been ordained. Won't you marry us, please? And like, Arya clearly is like, I don't want to do this. Like, I do, for so many reasons right now, after this day I have had, I do not want to do this. One of my favorite little Arya moments is the look that she throws back at Liam. Like, can you believe this bitch? Like, it is. It is great. Like, again, like, Lucy Hale is the MVP of this episode. She's so funny in, like, such a stupid series of storylines. She is so funny. But, like, the implication here seems to be that, like, she's going to do it. Because, you know, she's a Montgomery and they don't like conflict.
Yeah, she's Ella's daughter. So, of course, they're going to be able to roll over her. But poor Arya, she didn't want to join anyone in matrimony. And now she has had to marry two very badly matched couples in one night.
I hope that she just recycles the whole ceremony that she gave to Byron and Ella and, like, doesn't even change the names. Like, I hope she says to them, just to make them feel real weird, I hope she says to them, Dad, you can kiss Mom.
I hope that Arya, being Arya, didn't really want to perform the ceremonies, but was, like, too conflict averse to say that. So she actually, like, didn't go through the thing of getting ordained online. Like, she meant to, but then she just sort of ran out of time. So she was just like, I mean, I'm sure it doesn't really matter. And she just went through. Probably neither of them are actually legally married as a result.
That would be great. That would be really great. Also, I feel like such a missed opportunity is that, I guess they do this with the Haleb wedding later, like, next season, but, like, with these, both of these weddings that happen in this episode are really rushed. I feel like it's such a missed opportunity that it's not like, you know, like, some, like, it's a green card marriage, or it's like a, so you can't testify against me marriage. Like, that would be a really interesting, I mean, not really interesting, a more interesting twist. The other thought that I had is, you know that I had kind of joked about Sarah and Allie as a couple, but I actually think, like, so think about in the first scene when Emily and Hannah are trying to convince Allie that, you know, Sarah is bad. And then you have all of the, like, Rollins and Allie stuff in this episode. If it was Allie and Sarah, that would be actually kind of an interesting conflict, that, like, Allison is, you know, secretly dating Sarah And meanwhile, the liars are more convinced than ever that Sarah is working against them.
Yeah, I think that would be fantastic. Just to finish out this episode,
yes.
In a lair full of wigs, A is programming a universal remote. I knew we were going to get to this.
Yeah,
this is the big thing that A is up to, is programming. Like, I'm trying to think about, like, what could be a less interesting task for A to be getting up to. Like, I don't know, making a paper airplane. Like, this is just not, like, the gripping A drama of days of yore.
Also, A needs to, like, read the instructions to program the remote. Like, A can't just, like, figure this one out on their own. I don't think so.
Yeah, A is like a top-level hacker, and yet when it comes to the universal remote, they're like, uh-oh, better make sure I've got this correct.
Maybe they do universal remotes differently in jolly old England. And maybe that's why, you know, Charlotte is, Alex is so very stumped by this remote.
Ugh. Well, possibly.
Episode. That was a dud. That was a dud of a dog of an episode. What are your final thoughts?
Oh, man. So I would just like to say that Emily, in this episode, which, like, the, like, really, like, the only, like, significant thing that happens is that Allison and Rollins get married. Like, that's actually something that is going to have, like, repercussions going forward. And again, that's something that happens in the last 3 minutes of the episode. So you have, like, 38 minutes leading up to, like, 3 minutes, which, similar to last week's episode, it was like, blah, 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 blah. And then in the last 2 minutes, Spencer found the luggage pole. So, like, all of these episodes could be reduced to, like, a 5-minute video clip. And it would be probably better.
A previously on segment. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So in this episode where Allison and Rollins are getting married, I would just like to point out that Emily's role in this episode is she's in the chaos closet scene at the beginning. She is kind of, cock-blocking Spaleb a little bit when she goes to see them. Then she has 2 scenes with Damien, 3 scenes with the truck, and 2 scenes with Hannah. So I really feel like when we think about the weight that we are giving to Hannah Marin regarding Spaleb being together, and when we think about the weight that is being given to poor Arya caught in between her current boyfriend and her former adult man, predator, etc., when we look at, like, all of this that's happening, and also just the weight that has been invested in, like, the Spencer Toby Yvonne love triangle, which is, like, kind of, like, co-triangulating with the Spencer Caleb Hannah love triangle, which is, like, attached to the Hannah Jordan Caleb love triangle. Like, we have, like, this whole constellation that the show is really invested in. And here we have Allison about to actually get married, and Emily's role or thoughts or feelings about any of that is not discussed at all. In fact, I don't even know if Emily knows that they're together, because Allison confided that to Spencer, but it's not clear that Spencer has told anyone. It's not clear that she's told Emily. It's not clear that Allison has told Emily, or if Emily just knows because Rollins showed up to do Allie's bidding the other week. Like, what do we think about that?
Yeah, it's real weird. I mean, the lack of investment in Emily and Allison is really, it kind of feels like the show has 3 main characters, Arya, Spencer, and Hannah right now. And then you have, like, you know, supporting characters like Emily and Allie / Mona. They feel like they sort of swap in and out, those two. And it's very strange. I think it's interesting to me that it's like the love story seems to be where we're getting all of our juice, and there's just absolutely no interest in telling a love story involving Emily, and so she just, like, doesn't get anything. You know, to your point about, like, does Emily even know about Rollins and Allison? I took the note, I think it was during the scene when Hannah just, or let's see, the scene where Emily blurts out to Hannah that Melissa, you know, they might be suspicious of Melissa again. And I took the note that, like, a thing that feels like it's happening so much this season is, like, information that might, like, be private information or, like, have ramifications if other people knew about it. Like, it's just being spilled willy-nilly and there's no fallout. Like, there's no real kind of conflict. Like, we've had that with, you know, Emily dropping out of school and the eggs stuff. You know, we've had that with the other liars finding out about Spaleb. Like, it's just sort of like, oh, yeah, we just all sort of know this stuff. And I think a very odd thing about this period of the show is it feels like, much like, you know, Emily diving out of the way of that monster truck, it's like the show is diving out of the way of opportunities for conflict. And it's weird. It's like storytelling is, like, this show has never been the greatest in terms of, you know, cohesiveness and all of that. But for the most part, it's, like, known how to at least tell a good story. And it seems like that ability is just evaporating more and more every episode.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. Also, like, one of the things that can make an otherwise not great episode feel okay is when there's a lot of really good liar interaction.
Right.
And we don't get, there isn't an all liars scene in this episode. There's no episode where all of the liars are together. It is, again, extremely segmented. I don't know if people's schedules had other stuff going on, but particularly the lack of care around Emily and Allison and whether they're going to be, like, they just had, like, a pretty significant emotional journey together, like,
yes,
not that long ago when Allison was the one helping her with the egg extraction and everything. And then it was actually just in the last episode when Emily was like, we have to tell Allison about this. We have to, like, clue her in on what's happening. So, like, they were kind of on the Emily and Allison are, like, getting closer again, but now they've just totally forgotten about that. Allison's getting married, no big deal, anyone don't even have to, like, focus on whether Emily knows that she's with this guy, whatever else is happening. And this, like, further demonstrates my point that I've said before that we talked about, where Emerson is endgame because those two characters are together at the moment when the show ends, but they're never treated as an OTP. Like, none of the other OTPs have someone who actually does marry someone else. And in addition to that, like, none of the OTPs, like, wind up with, like, a quick divorce, you know, next time we check in on them in the spinoff.
Well, totally. And I think the other piece of it, too, is, like, even if, you know, Hannah and Jordan had gotten divorced or had gotten married and then divorced, like, before Hannah and Caleb got back together, like, there is always this sense, unfortunately, but it's true, in any scene where Hannah and Caleb are together, there's always this sense of, like, this is the OTP. There is a lingering look. There is a lingering hand touch. These characters are going to get back together. We can feel it. You know, the music swells, whatever. And, you know, I feel like we have that in the Arya and Ezra scenes as well, where it's like there's always this sort of, you know, everything has double meanings and everything is very, like, heavily emotional. And there's just a framing. There's a romantic framing around their scenes together, even when the characters are not in a relationship, even when they're dating other people. And that is simply not the case in the Emily and Allison scenes. Like, there is never, it's never a thing of, like, they're framed as though, oh, there's a lingering feeling, there's a lingering look, there's a lingering touch. Like, there's not, like, intimacy intentionally built into their interactions at this point in the series. And I think that, like, there's not longing, which I think is so funny because, like, I feel like longing is, like, such a part of the queer experience. You know, it's why we all love Taylor Swift. But it's like, it's it's such a, like, it's such a missed opportunity. It's also, like, such a, like, easy thing to include. Like, you literally just hold on a shot of somebody's face for 3 seconds longer, and it's like, oh, there we go, some longing, some tension, some, like, feeling, you know? But the show is just so checked out, and I almost feel like at this point they had not even made the call that Emily and Allison were going to get together, because it really feels like they they could so easily drop that and nobody but the Emerson shippers would notice, you know?
Yeah. I think that you're right. It's definitely not treated with care. It's not treated with like the respect that the other heterosexual couples are constantly getting. Even Spencer and Toby, when you were talking about like romantic framing and like,
yeah,
like there are so many ways, there are so many cheap and easy ways that they could have like incorporated Emerson and made the whole story more resonant. Like, why is Emily staying here? Maybe Emily is staying because she does have feelings for Allison and she's kind of like trying to work through that. And now Allison is going to like run off and marry this dude. Like, that's something that would be interesting to have happen to Emily. Like, maybe Allison hurries to marry this dude because she's starting to have feelings for Emily and she still has a lot of internalized biphobia. Like, there's just so much. There's so much that could happen here. And we just don't. Instead, we get Emily playing peekaboo with the truck. Like, that is just criminal in my book.
Well, and I think I know we were kind of joking about like the, you know, the Damien, like it being played as a date, but I really have a problem with that, because to me, it really is showing that like Emily is not being written as a queer character in these moments. Emily is, it's like the default is straight. And so Emily is like kind of being written as like a straight or asexual character, which is, you know, not to our knowledge, the character that Emily is. And I just think it's so weird. You know, it reminds me a lot of the Sabrina stuff a couple of episodes ago, where we were talking about like when Emily is talking about, I like Sabrina. And we were like, are Emily and Arya thinking this is a date? Like, what is Arya's understanding of Emily's feelings towards Sabrina? Because we're being super vague about it. And it's like this weird, like Hays Code-esque treatment of Emily's sexuality that just is really baffling to me.
It's really weird. And also, like, once again, when you look at the plot, like, Emily does not have her own plot in this episode. Emily runs around this entire episode investigating shit on behalf of Hannah and Spencer.
Yes. Yeah. And like with the vague idea that somehow it's connected to her eggs, which, as you said, like Emily has become her eggs. Like, E is for Emily is for eggs at this point. It's just like that is the character. And it's such a like it's, you know, I mean, we haven't like we have talked about the eggs. We'll talk more about the eggs. We'll talk a lot more about the eggs when they are forcibly implanted into Allison. But like the idea of taking a woman and literally reducing her storyline to like her reproductive parts, basically, in a different but not entirely dissimilar way to the treatment of Charlotte, who was like, you know, that like the sort of being reduced to, I mean, they never really went into like, but, you know, being reduced to her transness, being reduced to like her body and her genitals, basically. Like, it's just all a very weird, very old fashioned take on a show that used to have really cool, interesting takes on female characters.
Yeah. Yeah. Unfortunately, the de-gayification has come to town. And it has, like, snapped up all of those interesting storylines and put them away.
Also, another thing is, I had forgotten how little Mona is around at this time in the show.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah, I'm really looking forward to her being back next week. I'm glad. Like, I thought the Melissa stuff was the best part of this dog of an episode. If Melissa had not been present, woof. Even more so than we already woofed.
Oh, I know. I totally agree. So next week is the episode where Arya gets a little burn on herself. Arya gets burned in a fireplace. Burn this. Kale, you know, Ashley is back. Toby is back. There's the There's the Yvonne stuff. I mean, another thing that I think we'll get into is we're sort of having this, you know, reproductive rights vis-a-vis PLL conversation is like, the treatment of abortion is also weird. Like,
yeah,
it's introduced here. It will continue to be weird in the way that the show deals with it. And yeah, I think that that's worth calling out as well. Yeah. So do we have anything else to say about We've All Got Baggage?
Burn this. That's what I have to say.
Burn this. Well, the next episode is Did You Miss Me? And I after Burn This. And I will say we did not miss We've All Got Baggage. Well, if you have thoughts on this episode, you can, of course, send us an email at everybodyapodcast@gmail.com. You can also check out our Instagram at everybodyapodcast. You can also send in a rating and review on iTunes. We would appreciate it. I am amazed that we somehow talked about this episode for an hour and a half because, like, I really didn't think we would. But, you know, kudos to us for always finding something to drag out about this mess of a show. Yes. Well, until next time.
Take care.